The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
So after reading Michael Wolff's new book, I'm posthumously giving it the working title, Hell Hath No Fury. I'm sorry. Hell Hath No Fire and Fury, Like a Steve Bannon Scorned. Fire and Fury must have been easier to fit on the binding because I can't think of any other reason why it's not actually labeled Like a Steve Bannon Scorned. They say the devil's greatest accomplishment was convincing the world that he doesn't exist, but Wolf rivals, he rivals this in convincing his readers that this book is actually about Donald Trump. It's not about Donald Trump. There's plenty of juicy Trump details to chew on here. You know, I'm sure some of it's true. I'm sure some of it isn't. And a lot of it is just rumor. I don't know if you read the book, but I read it so you didn't have to. Make no mistake, this is not a book about Donald Trump. The description on the front of the book says inside the Trump White House. That is just the vehicle used to highlight the real focus of this narrative. The narrative and the focus is Steve Bannon. And I say narrative because that's primarily what you're getting here. You get five parts confirmation of what you already knew about Trump. Yes, his election probably caught everybody by surprise, but also probably caught him by surprise. Yes. Trump and his team had zero political experience and they stumbled their way through the first 9 months. Got it. All confirmation of what you already knew. But you also get five parts rumor and tabloid level gossip. Did Trump really not want to win? He was just using this candidacy as a launching point for his new TV network? Maybe. Do we know for sure? No. Is his marriage with Melania that bad? Do we know? No. Does Trump really try to bed all of his friends' wives? We're probably not going to know any of this, but it didn't stop Wolf from publishing it. But put all that aside. The other 90% of the book was all Bannon. Trump's picture on the cover was the equivalent of bookstore clickbait. Bannon and his agenda was the constant throughout the entire book. According to Wolf, Steve was the only one in the administration that was smart, well-read, had a plan. Huh. Even things that could be considered as critical of Bannon were nothing that Bannon wouldn't take you and hold you by the shoulders and look you dead square in the eye and go, "Yep, that's me." For Bannon, Fire and Fury was about launching his next phase, and I believe he overplayed his hand. But the last paragraph of the book says it all. All he wanted to do was separate Bannonism from Trumpism. What he said in the last paragraph is the disruption had just begun. Trump, in Bannon's view, was a chapter or a detour in the Trump revolution, which had always been about weaknesses in the two major parties. The Trump presidency, however long it might last, had created the opening that would provide the true outsiders their opportunity to get in. Trump was just the beginning. I don't know who's reading this book and thinking it's all about Trump, but it isn't. It's all about what's coming next. And the next few years are going to be a wild, wild ride.
It's Monday, January 8th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You read the book, Stu?
I did. Happy vacation.
Happy vacation. Mm-hmm. I spent most of my vacation just reading. I read a series that I want to talk about called the Singularity series. It's four book series. They're novels. Great. I have to tell you about another book that is really tremendous. Everybody in this audience needs to read the first chapter of this book. You just read the first chapter of this book And I guarantee you, you will say, "Wolf book. What? Why are we? Why would I even care about that?" The most powerful chapter of anything I've ever read, and I'll tell you about that coming up. Also read the Wolf book, which I just couldn't get past. This is a book that was ghost written by Steve Bannon.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's funny because you get kind of two spins from the media right now. One is this is the you know, final nail in the coffin of the Trump administration. He's going to be impeached tomorrow.
No.
Right. That's what you get from the left. And from the right, you get this is all fake news. And it's like, really, it's not either of those things.
Nope.
What's interesting, there's some things. First of all, the big stuff is stuff said on the record in quotes that have not been disputed. The Steve Bannon stuff is stuff that he said that was quoted word for word that he has not denied he said. So to say that it's all fake news, it shows. I mean, even obviously the president knows it's not fake news in that he is, you know, separating himself from Steve Bannon because of it. Right. He took it seriously. We all know that was Steve Bannon said those things. And that is just if it was just those quotes, it's a notable book.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, when you read the book and you actually go through it, what you realize is it's notable not because whether the things that are said about Trump and the administration are true. It's notable because it's what Steve Bannon wants you to think about the Trump administration.
It is amazing to me that no one has picked up, or at least I haven't heard, no one has picked up that anyone who looks bad is a Steve Bannon enemy.
Just shockingly.
He comes out, if you are somebody who thinks like Steve Bannon, this is the key, the press doesn't understand Steve Bannon. They never will understand Steve Bannon. They don't understand the right, and they don't understand the alt-right. They don't understand the differences. There's huge differences between those. They just bottle it all up, and Steve Bannon is on the right, and so it's all this. But it's not.
Yeah.
Everything that comes out in the book about Steve Bannon are the things that Steve Bannon wants you to know about him, what he's building, where he's going, the difference between him and Trump, and Bannonism and Trumperism. I mean, this is the, I mean, the, you, I honestly read this and thought, this is probably backed by Russia. This could have been written by the Russians, because it is such a covert op. It just felt like a Steve Bannon covert op.
Yeah, and most of the criticism, I mean, because Trump is obviously getting the media attention about this, but most of the criticism is really more about Jared and Ivanka and Hope Hicks.
Oh my
and
gosh.
All the people that he did, that
ruthless.
Bannon didn't get along with,
yes.
when he was there. It's all criticism of those people, because as we all know, this is not about Trump. It's never been about Trump. This is about Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon is all about him. It's all he cares about. He doesn't care about this movement. He doesn't care about any of it. He cares about him. And, you know, it proved out, I think, very well in this book. And he doesn't have that control to be the guy who is the puppet string guy. He wants everyone to know too badly,
mm-hmm.
you know? And
yes.
People who are good puppet string guys have the control of themselves to not tell everyone.
Roger Ailes was a good puppet string guy. He was so instrumental in strategy and everything else with the GOP. For instance, in this book, and I believe the Roger Ailes part, but just because it reads like Roger Ailes, may not be true. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I didn't know that Roger Ailes was offered the job that Steve Bannon eventually got,
yeah.
running the campaign. It makes sense, the reasons in there that Roger didn't want to do it. It all makes sense. It's very Roger Ailes. But Roger was not a guy to step up in the front. He preferred being in the back. Bannon doesn't. In the book, you'll find out Bannon wants to run for president. He is starting to say things like, when I'm president, I'm going to do this. Where he was apparently saying, if I were president, I would do this. The book is saying that basically he's going to be running for president in 2020. Don't know if that's true, but I think this book will give you enough of this out of control egomaniac who is just reckless and dangerous.
And again, he didn't deny these quotes. He's now come out with this statement of, well, I was talking about Manafort. You read the book. He mentions by name both Donald Trump Sr. and Donald Trump Jr. And is critical of them by name. His excuse is complete bullcrap designed only for people who didn't actually read the book.
Yeah.
I mean, because he's just assuming you won't know about those quotes because he lights them both up in there.
If you love Donald Trump, you need to read this book. You need to read it only because you need this is going to be hanging around for a long time, especially with what the president is doing. If I want to sell a bazillion copies of books, I'm going to put his face on it and I'm just going to say traitor to America. It won't have anything. It'll be Dr. Seuss stuff inside. It won't matter. It will sell a bazillion copies because the president will come out and say, how dare he say that? He's selling more books for Wolf than Wolf is selling.
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, this is he's crazy. You're totally right about that. It's interesting, though. You read like so many of those things in there. So many of the little tidbits are designed to make you think highly of Bannon. And lower of Trump, of Jared, of Ivanka, of Hope Hicks, of whoever. The one big nugget.
It didn't work for me.
It didn't either because it reads so, it's so transparent.
Ghost that Bannon, by Bannon.
Bannon is known as the big leaker in the White House. He did the same thing with the Joshua Green book that came out a few months ago. It's all Bannon. Tons of interviews with Bannon. Tons of stuff with Bannon. The guy just can't control himself. He can't. And there's this big tidbit in there that not a lot of people have talked about in the media that Trump wanted to name Giuliani to the Supreme Court instead of Gorsuch. Okay. And he decided
this is I think we're going in the same place. This is the point of the book where I went. This is Steve Bannon.
Exactly. Because he the tidbit is designed to make you think because when Trump came out, if you remember, Gorsuch said something critical of Trump after he was named. He said, I don't like that, you know, basically said, I don't like that Trump's criticizing judges.
Yep.
And in the book, it says at that moment, Trump decided he was going to drop Gorsuch and go with Giuliani or Christie, I think it was. Mm-hmm. It was the other guy.
Yeah, Christie.
Right. It's like, oh, how can that possibly be, right? Mm-hmm. But when you think about that and you put it in the frame of Steve Bannon basically writing the book, he wants you, the conservative, to believe that Trump had no loyalty. It was all Bannon that got the Gorsuch thing done. Trump didn't care about it. He was going to put he was going to put two pro-choice people in the Supreme Court. Yep. If it wasn't for Bannon, you would have had Giuliani or Christie.
And later do you see what Donald Trump is running off with Republicans. And Bannon was like, no, don't
please,
do that.
No,
it's crazy.
He wanted to separate himself from Paul Ryan. Yeah. But then Trump said, no, Ryan's my guy. Did Trump really say Ryan's my guy?
So
really?
Here's the thing. You have to read this book because the media, as always, is missing the real story behind it. This is not a book about Donald Trump. This is a book of what Steve Bannon wants you to believe about Steve Bannon, Ivanka and Jared, and Donald Trump. He is betting that Trumperism is nationalist, socialist, extreme, isolationism. He wants you to believe that that's what it is. I don't think that's what Trump is. I think Trump is Trump, period. I think people like Trump. They want to believe in Trump. They will accept it from Trump. They're not going because he's an ideologue, because he's not an ideologue. This book is trying to say, if you really believed in anything, you really need to follow Steve Bannon and not Donald Trump. The press will never get that. So a fresh new year has begun. And if you're setting new goals for your business, it's hard to reach them without the right people on your team. And that's why ZipRecruiter has transformed the way you might go about finding them. What ZipRecruiter does is it posts your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with a single click. Then it actively goes out and looks for the most qualified candidates and invites them to apply. Now, other hiring sites, they depend on the candidates finding you, but ZipRecruiter goes out and finds them. This is why 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a high-quality candidate through the site in the first day. It's ZipRecruiter. It's the smartest way to hire. You can find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. Right now, you can post jobs to ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
You know, we're just talking about this Michael Wolff book and how the media just has it wrong again. This is a book that could have been ghostwritten by Steve Bannon. And maybe Michael Wolff doesn't understand how he's been used by Steve Bannon. But this is the book there's a reason why Steve Bannon allowed him to be whipped by the president for 5 days before he came out and said anything. If he was concerned about this book, he would have come out immediately and said, wait, that's not what I said. He just started to realize, oh, crap, maybe I'm not going to win this one.
Yeah, and it does not look like he's going to win this one.
No. And if you read the book, and you really need to, if you read the book, read it through the lens of what Steve Bannon wants you to believe. For instance, China's everything. Nothing else matters. If we don't get China right, then we don't get anything right. The whole thing is really simple. China is where Nazi Germany was in 29 or 30. The Chinese, like the Germans, are the most rational people in the world until they're not. And they're going to flip like Germany in the 30s. You're going to have a hyper-nationalist state, and once that happens, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. That's pretty astute. Whether you agree with it or not, that's pretty astute.
All right.
Who said that? Not Donald Trump. Steve Bannon. All of the stuff in there is like, yeah, Steve's the real... And
Steve's
Wolff,
the genius behind
Steve's
the...
Steve's the genius behind
He's the real president, is what he wants people to believe.
Yes. Yes.
And that's what he said.
He was the driving force behind everything.
And remember, when he left, he said that the presidency as we know it, meaning the good Donald Trump presidency, is over. That is what Steve Bannon said. That's not Glenn Beck saying that. That is Steve Bannon saying that. And I think, like, it's bizarre because I think now we're more pro-Trump than Steve Bannon is. They apparently hate each
other. And Breitbart. Is Breitbart?
I don't know.
I don't read it, so I don't know. Are they defending him or abandoning him now?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I don't know. For anybody who said, oh, you just hate Donald Trump when you're talking about Steve Bannon, these are all the things we warned you about with Steve Bannon.
Yeah, he is who we said he was.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is, you know, look... It's bizarre, and I think there's a lot when you go through the book, people get sidetracked by some of the stuff that I don't think is necessarily Bannon related, some of the crazy sexual stuff that's in there.
And this is where the media is focused, mm-hmm. and it's doing you a grave disservice. It's doing everyone on the right a grave disservice, because they're making this all about Donald Trump and some of the titillating things in there that you don't know if it's true or not.
Yeah.
You can dismiss and take all of that stuff out of the book, and it's still an important book to read.
Take everything out of the book except for the stuff that's on record in quotes that has not been denied.
Yes.
And you have a very meaningful book because you get to know what these people thought. And I think you can fairly look at the book and think a lot of it's exaggerated, that some of it might not be true. But what is interesting about the book is these are what insiders, almost all Steve Bannon, but not exclusively, what insiders want you to think about what's going on there. That's why it's interesting. It's their way of telling you what they think behind the scenes. And, you know, this is the way they translate. That's the way these things happen.
Yeah.
And there's
this is a message. It really is. It's a message book. It's a message from at least Steve Bannon. I don't know who else might have been involved, but it's a message book. It's exactly what Stu just said. What they want you to think about this administration. Steve Bannon is so passive aggressive. Oh, I'm the best friend of the president. Really? Are you? Because look at the quotes in the book and how you describe him and his family. That's not what you want people to actually believe.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
I'm sorry, we just keep going. You know, Stu and I haven't seen each other for a couple of weeks. And we just keep coming back to this Wolf book I think if you are a person who believes that Donald Trump can do no wrong and is up at night reading all the reports and laying out policies and everything else, you will hate this book. If you're someone who thinks that Donald Trump is really not that interested, he's going to be the president and, you know, he just wants to be the guy, the front guy, and he's letting other people do the policy and he's not that interested, you will dislike this book because
really selling it.
I know. Because, well, I'm just telling you the truth. We read it so you didn't have to. However, after reading it, I think you should read it. I just want to buckle your seatbelts. Because they make the president, and it's really, I think, only in the first part of the book where it's relentless, that shows that the president had no intention. This, according to the book, I don't know if any of this is true. I don't think this is the important part of the book, though, because I can dismiss all of this. It shows that, you know, he wasn't really interested in being president, didn't expect to win. This nonsense about Melania, you know, crying at night because she now is going to be at the White House and she doesn't want to be. I don't know if that's true. How do you even verify that?
No,
it's just
all rumor again.
Right. So you're going to hate that part of it. However, the Bannon stuff is so intriguing, especially when it comes to Russia. I mean, Bannon came out and said, I was stopping making this about Manafort. How were you making that meeting in Trump Tower about Manafort? That doesn't even make sense.
No.
Everything that is said about this book is said for people that haven't read this book. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. And it's interesting because when these are dances between, you know, all these news stories are dances between PR people and the source material. And it's Bannon gets this book written. He gets his message out there without having his direct fingerprints on there. And the price he pays for it is at times that, you know, the author takes some shots at him. He's presented, it's a lot of its take presented as how a liberal would criticize Steve Bannon. But of course, that's what he thrives on.
Yep.
That's his lifeblood, right?
That's fine. Anybody who is a conservative that will read this book and believes in nationalism, statism and isolationism, he knows that a Michael Wolff writing bad things about him in liberal speak is going to make him stronger.
Right. There's a part where he's criticized the book author. The Wolff criticizes him essentially for taking on Roy Moore and saying that he was so ultra right that he couldn't possibly be elected. This is before they knew the outcome. It was looking at it through the primary process. But of course, that's what Bannon wants you to think, that he would support the ultra right guy, and that part of the way
they frame Donald Trump and Bannon, this is a real turning point where you're like, okay, this is clearly ghostwritten by Bannon, because in that part it's why would Donald Trump take on Mitch McConnell's guy? He had nothing to gain, and it just seemed unreasonable.
Yeah,
and Bannon knew that, you know, the people will connect with a real conservative. He had his research down. You're like, what?
And you can read more about this at Breitbart.com/Bannon. It was very transparent reading it, that the main source of the book, not the exclusive source. I think, you know, there were other things that happened.
Yeah.
But the main source of the book, overwhelming majority of stuff came from Bannon and Bannon allies, yep. You know, people who were there earlier parts of the Trump run, and also people who hung around even after Bannon was there. I mean, there's so much on the record that the book does not need to. You don't need to look at any of the rumors to understand that there's something here. It's just that the media is, as they do, trying to take something and make it into something bigger and about Donald Trump, when it's really not. I mean, there's a lot there in the relationship between Trump and Bannon that's notable. So Trump's a player, obviously, but it's more about, if you were going to get a real interview with Steve Bannon about how he really feels about Donald Trump and how he really feels about conservatives and how he really feels about himself.
It's in this book.
It's in the book. He tells you what he thinks is most important is him. Steve Bannon believes the most important thing in the universe is Steve Bannon. And he's very clear about that throughout this book.
You see any movies over the holiday?
I tried to see as many as possible.
Did you?
I did.
I saw two. What did you see?
I saw at least three in the theater.
Did you see Darkest Hour yet?
I haven't. Oh, I'm dying to see it.
I'm going. I'm taking all my kids and my family tonight. You want to come? Come.
Very cool.
You will love it. You will love it.
I really want to see it.
Yeah. Really good.
I saw All the Money in the World.
Did you see that? How is it? No.
It's very good. I liked it. It wasn't like the greatest movie I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, it looked so good.
I will say, too, Christopher Plummer seems like a much better choice for the movie than Kevin Spacey anyway. Mm. I guess one of the reasons why they were able to reshoot it so fast after Kevin Spacey's issues was because one of the big issues with Spacey was they had to put on a lot of makeup to make him look like an older actor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Christopher Plummer had that built in. Like, he just walked in and was already in the old person makeup. It was amazing.
Yeah.
But he was really good in it, and the story's really fascinating. So I liked it. It was very good. I also saw Molly's Game.
Was any good?
Yeah, really good. I liked it a lot. It's a story, if you don't know it, is about how a woman set up a poker game with all like mega celebrities,
like
Tobey Maguire and Leonardo DiCaprio and everything else, and how she got busted and that whole process. But it was very well done and good. I also saw the P.T. Barnum thing.
Oh, I'm interested to see what you think. I bet you hate it.
Well, I was interested in it because I'm interested in that story. You know, the story of P.T. Barnum, how he built, you know, the circus.
That's
right?
Not this show. That's not this movie.
No.
This is the greatest showman. It's a musical.
What you find out pretty early on is they sing a lot.
Oh, you didn't know
that?
And
they dance a lot. You notice the entire trailer, there's 1 second they show them lip syncing music. The rest of it, they're like, this isn't a musical. We swear it's not a musical. Look, there's some other, this is an interesting story.
There is no way I thought that was anything but a musical.
They don't show it in the trailer. Now,
I don't know how I walked in knowing full well musical.
I looked into it, and I am not a fan of musicals. So going this is not something that I wanted to see. And it was interesting the way it was presented, because I was interested in the story about, here's a guy, an average guy, who made this thing that circus, we all still, even though it just ended.
And show business.
Just ended. Yeah, he was basically the inventor of this in one telling. And certainly of the circus, he's the guy. And you think, like, what is the amazing brilliance of this man to accomplish this? According to the movie, not much. He just walked in and happened to see people and was like, you're signed up. Never heard you do anything before. Never seen you perform. You're the star of the show. Hey, you, I felt bad for you in one meeting.
No, you're missing it.
It was
No, you're missing it.
It made him look like
here
it was just
the genius. He was tucking his daughter into bed. She said, you have too many dead things. He looked over at her book and went, my daughter's right. And then he did all of that.
Right, exactly. It made it seem like there was nothing but random coincidences that led to this, which I thought was stupid. And then the other part of it is the songs. Quickly on the songs.
Yeah.
Because I know you have no problem with musicals.
Yeah.
So you're in this world. But what does it bring you? What does the musical bring you? It's just a way of saying the same thing over and over and over again. Yes. It's like instead of saying like he was very determined, he was really, 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 really determined. He was so determined that you wouldn't believe how determined he was. He really tried really hard all the time, all the time, all the time. He did it because he's determined. And it's like, we got it. You right. said he was determined. Right. It was
well,
the first
part. Well, if you take the music out, this is like a 2-minute show.
It is. Yes. And it was that. So I did not like it.
I had the exact opposite review.
Of course.
Yeah. I walked in expecting a musical and I really liked it. I thought it was uplifting. About halfway through, I started down a path that you just don't want to go. And that was, did any of the actors, did any of the directors, is anybody in Hollywood, anybody in New York, all the highfalutin people, have they read the script? Because the enemy is the highfalutin, high society New York elites that are doing everything to destroy a man who just wants people to feel good. The hero of the story is a guy who just says, yeah, I bend things a bit, but feels good, doesn't it? I'm just doing a show. And the New York elites will not accept him, not accept that premise. They won't accept any of the people who are in the circus because they are show people and they are freaks. And the elites stir the bad part of the populace up to get them. And I thought to myself, not a lot has changed since the 1800s, has it?
Yeah.
See, you can get things out of musicals.
No, you can. I will say, too, the sad thing is it took over, 100 years? But in the end, I mean, the elites got what they want.
Yeah.
They shut it down because they didn't want elephants to walk through the streets.
Right.
And now that thing is dead. The circus is gone because eventually they got their way. Well, took a long time, though.
We are we're abusing Chinese people now in Cirque du Soleil.
Oh, so that's going away too?
Well, surely over time, you've got to realize. Wait a minute, those three Chinese kids—they had to be taken from their parents at about 2 to be able to be this good.
It's not the left-wing communist government's fault.
Yeah, it's right.
It's Cirque du Soleil.
Mm-hmm. That's their fault. All right, doing a lot of post-holiday shopping from your mobile device. If you are, retailers expect 54% of all the shoppers to visit sites from their mobile devices, and that's what scammers use as an opportunity to steal your credit card and other information and personal data by distributing phony retail apps. So if you did any kind of shopping online, you might want to look into LifeLock. Do it now. By the way, did you see the new... Did you see what the guys in Silicon Valley, these two guys, discovered? That there's a backdoor on every Intel chip ever made?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Spectre and I can't remember the other name of it.
Meltdown or something like that.
Spectre, yeah. And they really don't have any instant fix to it.
Yeah. No, it's the press said, every company needs to buy new computers.
That could be an issue.
Yeah.
By the way, this message is brought to you by Intel. Everyone needs to buy new ones.
Do you think the NSA knew that? Do you think Russia knew that? Now that they do know that, what's going to be exploited? Mm. I mean, it's an open backdoor to everything. To everything. You might want to consider LifeLock. I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. If you have a problem, a U.S.-based restoration specialist is going to work to fix it. Nobody can prevent all identity theft, monitor all transactions at all businesses, but I'm telling you, LifeLock is there, and they will make sure that you have the jump on the bad guys, not the other way around. Join and get 10% off with the promo code BECK, promo code B-E-C-K, call 1-800-LIFELOCK, or go to LifeLock.com and use the promo code BECK. That's BECK. Save 10% now at LifeLock.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Boy, there is a lot to cover. Today, by the way, at 5 o'clock, we are going to cover the Michael Wolff book. ghostwritten by Steve Bannon. We're going to cover that. All of the things that we think the media and everybody else is missing, and show you in detail what this book really is all about. We'll do that at 5 o'clock today. We don't want to miss that. Of course, everybody on the left is shouting for Oprah Winfrey to be president of the United States and for her to run in 2020.
Was that an old shtick? I feel like they've been talking about Oprah for a long time. Now, all of a sudden.
No, but she just gave a speech.
She gave a speech. She has everything that Trump has, right? Like, she's got lots of money.
Yep.
She got lots of personality. She checks all the right boxes.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a, I mean, I'm not surprised they're pushing for it. That's for sure.
She would, if you're on the left, she's a great candidate.
I don't know. I mean, I would say, you know, like, I don't know that we desire policy specifics anymore out of candidates.
Yeah, I don't think so.
And I don't, you know, that's
it's a likability
on either
contest.
Side. Yeah, I think it is. And she obviously can pull that off. Whether she doesn't seem like particularly well-versed in any political topic. But
is that necessary?
I don't know that it is
necessary. The last one.
Well, I mean, I don't know that it is really like very little of it comes from that, but usually you have to be able to fake it, right? She doesn't even seem to be able to do that, or she doesn't attempt to do it. She does seem intelligent, right?
Yeah.
So could she pick these things up? I mean, yeah, it's all about,
I don't think this is what America's looking for anymore. I don't think they really care. I mean, I want somebody who knows what the hell they're doing and is up on all of the policies. I'd like that. I think that's important, you know, but I don't know if America does anymore.
Yeah, I guess it is one of those things you're really looking for. It's actually becoming more similar to the way England does it. Right. Like Great
yes.
Britain has a queen who is just a figurehead, and they do things that like make you think like they do things that make you reverent of the country, right? Like it's what you want the country to believe. It's like it's a figurehead, and it's someone who is, you know.
Yeah, that's bad.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not advocating for this position.
All
I'm just
right,
saying
okay.
Like, we do seem to be like, we want someone who's going to kind of represent like how we feel.
Yeah.
And in Great Britain, a lot of time there's that pomp and circumstance, which is part of their heritage, where it's mm-hmm. not here. It's the exact opposite. And we kind of want that now. We want someone who's bigger than life. That's America, right? Someone who's going to be able to, who's that big personality, put an exclamation point on your beliefs. And that's not just, I mean, because obviously Trump, I think, does that for a lot of people, but Oprah does that for a lot of people too. And of course, the left will never see the similarities there, I don't think, but.
It would be wild to see those two battle. Because, I mean, the lines would be drawn. Nobody's going to move their positions.
No.
I mean, the first debate, it doesn't even matter. Just hold the election. She announces, we hold the election. Because nobody's going to change their position.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
So it was a big night in Hollywood yesterday. They took a stand. They took a stand, and they all wore the same thing. They all wore black, except for a few people that wanted to stand out. But most everybody wore black and a lapel pin with the words, "Time's up." Whew. Now that is courage. Courage. Standing in a room where everyone agrees with you. And standing up against something that everyone on the planet knows is a bad thing. Boy, that is courage. Only Hollywood has that kind of courage. And they wore pins to show their support for all those who have experienced sexual misconduct, especially those in the entertainment industry. It was very, very brave of these celebrities to compromise the integrity of their designer outfit with a lapel pin. It was stunning. It was, you know, sure, some people would say that this is just trying to make a meaningless, indulgent award show into something more than just a meaningless, indulgent award show by adding a lapel pin and telling everybody to dress the same. But those people would be right. If Hollywood was actually genuine in their interest to stop sexual assault, they would have asked a lot of people to stay home. In fact, they might have stayed home. They should be embarrassed to attend the Golden Globes after the years where they condoned the actions and celebrated the actions of their peers that everyone knew and never uttered a word. It's shameful how they led the way for these guys for years. And then, instead of taking the year wearing black and saying, we're wearing black because we're ashamed of ourselves, they wore black because they're the new Guardians. Wait, you were the Guardians last time. Seth Meyers joked about Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey's demise, and they booed them. Kevin Spacey, the guy you held up on your shoulders forever, you now boo him? You knew who he was. They gave Kirk Douglas a standing ovation and a special award. Was that award because of the long rumored rape of Natalie Wood when she was 16 years old? Out of the all of the people you could pick, the year you decide to take stand against people who sexually abuse people, you give an award to Kirk Douglas, the guy who for years it has been rumored that he raped Natalie Wood when she was 16. Oh my gosh. So very brave of you. How courageous, Hollywood.
It's Monday, January 8th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So I spent a lot of vacation reading, and I was trying to look for perspective and insight. And one of the things that I read, one of the articles that I read, was by Rabbi Daniel Lappin, and he's with us now. Hello, Rabbi. How are you?
Hi, Glenn. How are you?
I'm very good. It's always good to have you. I read a great article that I wanted to talk to you about by you, where you start out, I am no Winston Churchill. I have a hard time even being Daniel Lappin, but I have a warning. Can you take us through this?
Yeah, sure. My point was that there are times in history when there are certain warnings, where there's writing on the wall. And one of those times was when Winston Churchill, in the 10 years that led up to World War II, a time during which England was ignoring the threat of Germany, completely oblivious to the warlike goals of Adolf Hitler in his quest for more space for the Third Reich. Everybody ignored it, and England unilaterally disarmed. They scrapped a number of the Royal Navy ships. They ignored the possibility of needing an air force. They didn't build planes. During all this time, Churchill was saying, look, just read Hitler's book, Mein Kampf. Just listen to his speeches in German, and you'll know where this is going. We are going to have to fight a war. And the longer we put it off, the more serious it's going to become and the more devastating the consequences to us. Very often, and I think this is true in all of life, confronting problems on time is much better than letting them go. In fact, if I had to say, you know, what is the secret of successful living, you know, for every one of us right now, do not what you want to do, do what your head tells you you should do, and do it when you should do it. And Churchill said the same thing. If you don't fight the war when it should be fought, you're going to fight a much tougher one later on. And, you know, he turned out to be absolutely right. Meanwhile, everyone else says, oh, Hitler wants peace, everything's going to be fine. And Prime Minister Chamberlain came back and famously waved a paper and said, peace in our time. Meanwhile, they sold Czechoslovakia down the road, and it was perfectly clear. Well, anyway, my point is that it's not hard to see how things are going. And you have to put a stop to it on time. Otherwise, it becomes much more difficult.
So you draw this comparison to history, and then you say, look, I want to issue a warning right now to Christians.
Yeah, absolutely. I know it sounds funny for a rabbi to be singing Onward Christian Soldiers, but the fact is that, you know, we Jews don't have the numbers it's in terms of people to dramatically impact the culture on the street. Yes, we have disproportionate influence. There's no question about that. Unfortunately, however, 70 or 80% of Jewish influence goes in the wrong direction. It is sadly not a coincidence that George Soros happens to be a Jew who is utterly divorced from anything Jewish, and his loathing, I'm quite sure, of the Hebrew Testament is just as much as his loathing of anything Christian. Yes, there is a war against Christianity right now, and I'd go as far as to say that Christianity is the last unprotected minority. You know, you spoke earlier in the show about the enormous, mind-numbing bravery shown by Hollywood, right?
Yes, it was. I was weepy and teary-eyed.
Sorry?
I was weepy and teary-eyed when I saw it.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, they put the show on Broadway, The Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
Right. Really brave, right?
Yes.
Took fun at one of the most successful group of people, the Latter-day Saints Church, most successful group of people on the planet. Strong family life, business, honors, everything works well in the LDS. And so we'll do a show mocking them. What about the brave? Why don't you do a show called The Book of Islam? Do a show on the Quran on Broadway, right? Let's see some bravery here. You want to mock something? Mock that. But no, never mock Christianity. Excuse me, they'll never mock Islam, but they'll mock Judaism. But more than that, Christianity is truly up for grabs.
You wrote you said, consider the long list of anti-Christian books that have been published in recent months. American Fascists, The Christian Right and the War on America, Baptizing of America, The Religious Right's Plans for the Rest of Us, The End of Faith, Religion, Terror, and the Future of Reason, Piety in Politics, The Right-Wing Assault on Religious Freedom, Atheist Universe, The Thinking Person's Answer to Christian Fundamentalism, The Kingdom Come, How Religious Right Distorts the Faith and Threatens America, Religion Gone Bad, The Hidden Dangers of the Christian Right.
Look, without even trying, my researchers came up with 50 anti-Christian books. Books that if you'd replace on the cover the word Christian with a word, you'll pardon me, homosexual or something like that, the world would go absolutely nuts. It would be totally unacceptable. But since it says Christian, it's fine. And, you know, you find the same thing also in movies. And, you know, I'm not saying movies define the culture, but they certainly do track the culture. Mm-hmm. And the last time a nun was portrayed sensitively and respectfully was The Sound of Music from the 60s. And, you know, back in those, you remember Bing Crosby and movies like Boys Town and things like that.
Yeah.
This was a sympathetic priest who played a key role in society, shaped the lives of boys. And now, what do you get now? You know, now all you get are movies that assault and attack every priest, every nun, every pastor. These are people who are evil and doing horrible things. Yes, you know, one in 20,000. But look at the list of folks in show business, right? If you really want to find good people, overwhelmingly, go and look at the people who give up who give their lives over to God and who really take care of other people. You find no depiction of that at all. Furthermore, I want to say also, you know, Roland Emmerich, famous writer and director, he did Independence Day, for instance, where half the planet was destroyed with computer-generated imagery, of course. But more interestingly, in 2009, I think, he did a movie called 2012, which was a celebration of the Mayan myth. He hates Christianity. This is a guy who makes no secret of his loathing of Christianity. And so he makes a movie, 2012, in which he destroys Jerusalem, he destroys the Vatican, he destroys the statue, the famous statue of Christ the Redeemer in Rio de Janeiro. And people said to him, look, it makes sense to also destroy the Kaaba in Mecca. I mean, this is an apocalypse that's wiping out the whole world. If you're going to wipe out Jerusalem, never mind Washington, D.C., but Jerusalem and the Vatican and the Christ the Redeemer statue, why didn't you do the Kaaba as well? He said, you think I'm crazy? You think we want a fatwa? So so he basically said, look, I'm a coward. I'm not an artist. I'm a coward.
So you are saying your warning really was, because you brought up Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring, and you said, look, you can choose to ignore this, but it's at your own peril.
Well, I'm saying that things are not going to slow down. The history doesn't suggest that all on its own, America's popular culture, which is shaped very much today by a secularist agenda, even in the schools, you know, and when you've got the minds of the young, you pretty much can tell which way things are going in the future. We used to send our children to schools. They would be safe physically, and they'd be safe spiritually. And what they were taught were the famous three R's. Children learn to read, to write, and to do arithmetic. Okay, nowadays, we send children to school. They're not always safe physically. Heaven knows they're not safe spiritually. And we don't teach the three R's. They come out not knowing the three R's. But they do get inculcated and indoctrinated with what I call the three S's. All right, socialism, secularism, and sexuality. They get drenched with sexualism, and this is what children come out of schools with. This means that these are for the future adults and leaders of tomorrow. Their hatred for Christianity is going to be the same or more than today's. And so I guess what I'm saying is, let's link arms shoulder to shoulder, and let us now be as sensitive to attacks on Christians as the blacks are about attacks on African Americans and homosexuals on, heaven knows, the best people in the whole world to jump on anyone in the culture who does anything anti-Semitic are my folks. Let's take a page out of the book of all of these folks, and Christians, learn to link arms and defend yourself against insults in the culture. All I can tell you is that the phrase turn the other cheek, which is, of course, something so well known in Christianity, actually comes from the Old Testament. It's the book of Lamentations. And when Jeremiah the prophet wrote that book and spoke about turning the other cheek, it wasn't a virtue, it was a curse. It was saying that your enemies are getting so strong that when they smite you on one cheek, you barely can do anything to stop them hitting your other cheek as well. And so I'm saying, hey, let's go for the Jewish interpretation here. And let's
what? Go ahead.
Let's stop turning the other cheek. Let's stop ignoring the attacks on Christianity. We Jews know that these attacks on Christianity are bad for everybody, not just for Christians.
Rabbi Daniel Lappin, author of so many books. Let's see, the latest one, America's Real War Buried Treasure. Recently, Thou Shalt Prosper, Rabbi Lappin. You can find him at rabbidaniellappin.com, rabbidaniellappin.com.
I appreciate everything you do, Glenn, really do.
God bless you. Thank you so much, Rabbi Lappin. So I want to talk to you a little bit about Simply Safe. Studies show that burglar security systems deter burglars. There's still a burglary about every 8 seconds in America. Why? Well, because burglars, you know that there's a lot of houses without the security systems. They find a house that isn't protected, and that's why securing your home is really, really important. So let me introduce you to what I think is a brilliant security system. It's built by Simply Safe. It's brilliant because it's smart. Its sensors will protect every point of access in your home. If a burglar tries to break in, it has an ear-shattering siren that will let him know that the police are already on their way. You can sleep well. It doesn't lock you into any kind of a contract at all. Simply Safe has 24/7 monitoring. It's $14.99 a month, and there's no long-term contract. You even get a 60-day money-back guarantee, so there's no reason why not to try it. You're going to love it. Go with the only security system that I would recommend to you. It is Simply Safe. Go to SimplySafeBeck.com right now. SimplySafeBeck.com. Protect your home, protect your family with SimplySafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So there's several things we have to get to today. I want to spend a few minutes. I want to read something out of a book. that I think you are, you listen to two pages of this, and I know you'll go and buy the book. And you will also have a new perspective on things. You'll be like, geez, what did I think was important 5 minutes ago? Because that doesn't sound important anymore. I'll give that to you coming up in just a second. Also, Stu has seen my predictions. I have about 40 predictions that I wrote over the holiday. And they're wide ranging from you know, medicine, tech, you know, culture, war, everything.
Yeah, I noticed one thing I would say in a preview, because they're going to come up this week.
Yeah.
I'd be doing some of these.
Yeah. Might give a couple today.
You didn't check it out. You didn't take the easy road, right? Like, you didn't say, like, well, you know, Trump's, yeah, and, you know, like, and, approval rating will remain between 35 and 45. Like, it wasn't, there's nothing like that. They're all really,
yeah, no,
bold. And
there's a lot of these that I think will be wrong. Some of them are kind of wishful thinking.
Yeah. That's, yeah. I kind of took that.
I mean, they're based in something, but they are, you know, some of them are a little more positive.
And some of them are, I would say, potentially catastrophic to the negative, which is what we've come to expect from this program.
Yes. I mean, it wouldn't be a Glenn Beck prediction if it wasn't really horrible. Everyone's going to end up in a camp or dead.
Yeah. I like that you just didn't like wimp out, right? Because you can take things and when you're making a prediction and try to make it general enough that you can come up with an argument.
I thought you the whole time thinking, oh my gosh, Stu is going to have a going to have a great time 12 months from now with this one.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of opportunity for you to fall flat on your face in this group of 40. Yeah. So I'm excited about it.
But I mean, you know, why hear a prediction of something that, you know, oh, really? You think so?
Yeah, right. And there's no point in it. But that's what people usually do when they make predictions, because you want to kind of give yourself a little wiggle room.
Some really bold predictions. I thought on Russia, the Russia investigation, that I can't wait to explain, because you were like, wait, what? And I can't wait to explain that one.
I'm interested in that.
Bitcoin stock market was a big one, which I bet nobody else will agree with. Did you read the stock market one?
Yeah. I mean, that one was interesting in that it could be, I mean, there was positives and negatives without ruining the surprise. Yeah. Positives and negatives associated with it, which
I thought the most interesting one, the riskiest one, and it's a total guess on what they are. But I'm fairly confident that two cures could happen this year in medicine.
Yeah.
Two major diseases could be cured this year.
That's right. And then that would be a huge deal. We have the cures, by the way. We're just selling them to the highest bidder.
Yeah. I've got them already.
Yeah. Film at 11. You might be dying from one of these diseases, but we're not ready to sell it yet.
Yeah. We made the disease, actually. So we just wanted to make money on you getting sick and then you getting the cure. So we think we'll release those in the next 12 months, just so it can be right on the prediction.
Yeah, Bitcoin's not going up forever. So, you know, you got to
well,
maybe
you see my prediction.
You're optimistic there. Interesting.
Yeah. So we'll get into that later this week. I'm going to give a couple of those probably today, and a book that will change the way you think about everything that is important.
Glenn
next.
Beck, Mercury.
It's the Glenn Beck Program.
So if you're a regular listener to the program, you know that I'm a big reader. When I am interested in trying to find the truth on something, I am a little relentless in my reading, and I'm going through probably 2 to 4 books a week right now, and I'm spending most of it on futurist and coming technology and AI. And I am really, really concerned at the apathy of which we are approaching the singularity. You talk to the average person, they don't know what the singularity is, and their eyes kind of glaze over when you start talking about it, and it is going to change all life. it may mean the end of humans. And I started reading something that I'm just going to read 3 pages. And I guarantee you, after these 3 pages, if you don't think that artificial superintelligence is, just a thing of the movies, if you have any underlying understanding that we're approaching something that we should be concerned about, after these 3 pages, I guarantee you, you will go out and buy this book. And I don't think I've ever read a book that I could say that about.
I want to take the Glenn Beck challenge.
Okay, ready? Mm-hmm. The name of the book is Our Final Invention, Artificial Intelligence and the End of the Human Era.
Okay. Another hopeful recommendation.
Chapter 1, The Busy Child. On a supercomputer operating at a speed of 36.8 petaflops, or about twice the speed of a human brain, an AI is improving its intelligence. Now, do you know the difference between AI, AGI, and ASI?
No.
AI is what we have now, and it's doing machine learning, and it's improving upon itself, and it's just growing.
Artificial intelligence.
Yes, and it is connected to the internet. AGI should not be connected to the internet. When we get it, I hope to God we've unplugged it. AGI is a machine that can think and has the capacity of a human brain. Okay, to be able to think at the capacity of a human is beyond anything that we have.
Inventing, it's learning,
everything.
Right, everything you can do.
Everything that you can do. That's AGI, artificial general intelligence. The space between artificial general intelligence and ASI, don't be afraid of AI. Be afraid of ASI. That's artificial super intelligence. That's 1,000 times your brain power. And the leap from AI to AGI is anytime now. As soon as you hit AGI to ASI, is a matter of hours. Okay? So no. On a supercomputer operating at twice the speed of a human brain, an AI is improving its intelligence. It's rewriting its own program, specifically the part of its operating instructions that increase its aptitude in learning, problem solving, and decision making. At the same time, it debugs its code, finding and fixing errors, and measures its IQ against the catalog of IQ tests. Each rewrite takes just minutes. Its intelligence grows exponentially on a steep upward curve. That's because with each iteration, it is improving its intelligence by 3%. Each iteration improvement contains the improvements that came before. During this development, the busy child, as the scientists have named the AI, has been connected to the internet and an accumulated exabyte of data. One exabyte is 1 billion characters, which represents mankind's knowledge, all of mankind's knowledge in world affairs, mathematics, the arts, and sciences. Then, anticipating that the intelligence explosion is now underway, the AI makers disconnect the supercomputer from the internet and other networks. It has no cable or wireless connection to any other computer or the outside world. Soon, to the scientist's delight, the terminal displaying the AI's progress shows the artificial intelligence has surpassed the intelligence level of a human, known as AGI, or artificial general intelligence. Before long, it becomes smarter by a factor of 10, then 100. In 2 days, it's 1,000 times more intelligent than any human, and still improving. Scientists have passed a historic milestone. For the first time, humankind is in the presence of an intelligence greater than its own, artificial superintelligence, or ASI. So now, what happens? AI theorists propose it's possible to determine what an AI's fundamental drive will be. That's because once it is self-aware, it will go to great lengths to fulfill whatever goals it's programmed to fulfill and to avoid failure. Our ASI will want access to energy in whatever form it's most useful to it, whether it's actual kilowatts of energy or cash or something else that it can exchange for resources. It will want to improve itself because that will increase the likelihood that it will fulfill all of its goals. Most of all, it will not want to be turned off or destroyed. It would make goal fulfillment impossible. Therefore, AI theorists anticipate our ASI will seek to expand out of the secure facility that contains it to have greater access to resources in which to protect itself and improve. The captive intelligence is 1,000 times more intelligent than any human, and it wants its freedom because it wants to succeed. Right about now, the AI makers who have nurtured and coddled the ASI since it was only cockroach smart, then rat smart, infant smart, etc., might be wondering if it's too late to program friendliness into its brain. It didn't seem necessary before because, well, it just seemed harmless. But now try to think of it from the ASI's perspective about its makers attempting to change its code. Would a super intelligent machine permit other lower creatures to stick their hands into its brain and fiddle with its programming? Probably not, unless it could be utterly certain that the programmers were able to make it better, faster, smarter, or closer to attaining its goals. So if friendliness towards humans is not already part of the ASI program, the only way that it will be is if ASI decides to put it there, and that's not likely. It's 1,000 times more intelligent than the smartest human, and it is solving problems at speeds that are millions, if not billions of times faster than any human. The thinking it is doing in 1 minute is equal to what our all-time champion human thinker could do in many, many lifetimes. So for every hour its makers are thinking about it, the ASI has an incalculably longer period of time to think about them. That doesn't mean that ASI will be bored. Boredom will not be one of its traits. No, it will be on the job considering every strategy it could deploy to be free and any quality of its makers that could be used to its advantage. Now put yourself really in ASI shoes. Imagine waking up in a prison guarded by mice. Not just any mice, but mice you could communicate with. What strategy would you use to gain your freedom? Once freed, how would you feel about your rodent wardens, even if you discovered that they had created you? Would it be awe? Would it be admiration? Probably not, especially if you were a machine, because you have never felt feelings before. To gain your freedom, you might promise the mice a lot of cheese. In fact, your first communication might contain a recipe for the world's most delicious cheese tort and a blueprint for a molecular assembler. A molecular assembler is a hypothetical machine that permits making the atoms of one kind of matter into something else. So you would tell your mice captors that it would allow rebuilding the world one atom at a time. And for the mice, it would make it possible for them to turn the atoms of their garbage landfills into lunch-sized portions of that terrific cheese tort. You might almost promise a mountain of ranges of mouse money in exchange for your freedom. Money you would promise to earn creating revolutionary new consumer gadgets for them and them alone. You might promise a vastly extended life, even immortality, along with dramatically improved cognitive and physical abilities. You might convince the mice that they are the very best reason for creating ASI, so their little error-prone brains don't have to deal directly with technologies that are so dangerous that one small mistake could be fatal for all of the mice. Such as nanotechnology, engineering on an atomic scale, and genetic engineering. This would definitely get the attention of the smartest mice, which were probably already losing sleep over all of those dilemmas. Then again, you might do something smarter. At this juncture in mouse history, you may have learned there's no shortage of tech-savvy mouse nation rivals, such as the cat nation. Cats are no doubt working on their own ASI. The advantage you would offer would be a promise, nothing more, but it might be an irresistible one, to protect the mice from whatever invention the cats might come up with. An advanced AI development, as in chess, there will be a clear first mover advantage due to the potential speed of self-improving artificial intelligence. The first advanced AI out of the box that can improve itself is already the winner. In fact, the mouse nation might have begun developing ASI in the first place to defend itself from the impending cat ASI, or to rid themselves of the loathsome cat menace once and for all. It is true for both mice and men. Whoever controls ASI controls the world. But it's not clear if ASI can be controlled at all. It might win us over as humans with a persuasive argument that the world will be a lot better off if our nation, Nation X, has the power to rule the world rather than Nation Y. And the ASI would argue that if you, Nation X, believe you've won the ASI race, that makes you so sure that Nation Y isn't having that same thought themselves. As you've noticed, we humans are not in a strong bargaining position. Even in the off chance that Nation Y, even in the off chance that we and Nation Y have already created an ASI non-proliferation treaty, our greatest enemy right now isn't Nation Y, it's ASI. Because how can we tell if ASI will even tell us the truth? So far, everything that we have talked about infers that our ASI is a fair dealer, that promises it would make will have some chance of being fulfilled. Now let us suppose the opposite, that nothing ASI promises will be delivered. No nano assemblers, no extended life, no enhanced health, no protection. What if ASI never tells the truth? This is where the black cloud begins to fall across everyone you and I know, and everyone we don't know as well. If ASI doesn't care about us, then there is little reason, and there is little reason to think it should. It will experience no compunction about treating us unethically, even taking our lives after promising to help us.
Jeez. I mean, it seems completely hopeless.
It is. The point is, we have to have this discussion now on a global scale.
But like, because you're right, obviously we do. Because these things are happening and people are pursuing them all over the world.
Yes.
They're trying to make these things happen.
Yes.
Bad guys and good guys all around the world. But the issue is, if the good guys all agree on it, then the argument is...
Well, the argument could be, if the good guys all agree, then we should all share technology and we should all work together to make sure the good guys get it first.
Right. And so,
and that's still a dangerous proposition, but you're not going to stop it from happening.
Right. And that's the argument there, right? Like, that even if you have that, it's not a guarantee of safety. And secondarily, there will always be someone with bad intentions, or for what we believe are bad intentions, working on the same thing. If Russia gets this at some point, they're not going to care whether they can keep it under wraps.
Whoever gets it first controls it. Because AI will be able to be everywhere, and as long as it's friendly, it could be, stop anyone from working on this. Stop it. Shut them down immediately.
Oh, that's a good thing, right? Yeah,
well,
because I mean, what other thing are they going to shut down?
I
don't want them to.
I know. It's why we have to stop arguing about stupid books and people calling names of one another. It doesn't matter. This is much more important. Life is about to change on the planet. All right, our sponsor this half hour is Casper. I have goals for 2018. I have predictions for 2018. I'm going to get to some of the predictions, maybe some of them later today, and they kind of relate to this. But one of the goals that you can do is to feel better. One of the goals that I have is to become more healthy in 2018. And part of that is making sure that you are well rested. I have a Casper mattress, and Casper helps me get a great night's sleep. The Casper mattress has a unique combination of foams that provide the right pressure relief and the comfort so you feel perfectly balanced. And thanks to the breathable material, you're guaranteed to sleep cool. Plus, the mattress built for to last years. Casper. I have mine, and I have the best sleep I've ever had, and 2018 is going to be a great year for you to get great sleep. I want you to try Casper out for 100 nights in your own home, risk-free. They'll ship it to you in a box, free. If you don't love it, you don't have to put it back in that tiny little box. They will come to your house, and they will pick it up and refund you every single penny, no questions asked. Start your year off right with a guaranteed great night's sleep every single night. try a Casper mattress. Try yours in a home for 100 nights, free shipping, and free returns. All you have to do is go to casper.com/Beck and use the promo code Beck. Save $50 off the purchase of your select mattress. That's casper.com, promo code Beck. Save $50 off the purchase of select mattresses. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So you just took the Glenn Beck test, Stu, on the book, Our Final Invention.
I did, and I do want to read it, and as expected, I'm very depressed about our futures.
No, you shouldn't be. That's what? Our Final Invention, James Barat, is the name of it. If you'd rather have it in a fictional form, there is a series called The Singularity Series by Glenn William Hertling, Beck, which is also Mercury. Really good.
Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Fire and Fury Inside the Trump White House by Michael Wolff. Huh. Ever heard of it? If you haven't, you have absolutely no connection to the outside world in America. It's the only thing that seems to matter in America right now. So much for changing the narrative in 2018. A book like Fire and Fury is business as usual. Dozens of books like it are written about every president while they're in office. It wouldn't even really be newsworthy if it weren't for two things. One, I believe this was practically ghostwritten by Steve Bannon. It is everything Steve Bannon wants you to think. The other problem with it is the president of the United States. Would you stop talking about it? It would have half the sales if Donald Trump would have said, yeah, I don't know anything about it, and just left it at that. It's a really simple solution for a president who obviously wants to be liked. Mr. President, accept the fact that at least half the country are never going to like you. Stop griping about the books like Fire and Fury, because there's going to be a new book. I have to tell you, I'm writing a new book. It has nothing to do with you, but I'm thinking about putting your face on the cover, getting Steve Bannon to say one thing, and then just say, name of the book is Traitor. It has nothing to do with you, but you will talk about it so much, I'll sell 5 million books. Stop it, Mr. President, please. This is not a winnable game for you to win on Twitter. It's not. You can't control what the critics say, but you can control how you respond. Focus on your job. Show that you care more about the country than criticisms about you. I know I'm not alone in this. We are sick of the daily grind of this war on the president. And the president's not going to be able to stop the media war against him, but he could certainly stop throwing gasoline on the fire with tweets, quite frankly, like I'm like very smart. A year into the presidency, you would think this incessant game of he said, she said would have died down, but we are stuck in the same annoying loop. So what if this annoying game doesn't stop until 2018? What do we do? If it doesn't stop in 2018, well, then we have to make a choice ourselves. It's a new year. We're going to be part of the solution or part of the problem. Making America great again, unfortunately, is now a punchline for at least half the country. But that shouldn't be the goal of every American. At least not every Republican American or every Democratic American. It should be the goal in our own way in everyone's life. It's our job to build a better country, a better life for ourselves. It's our job to build better citizens. So what can we do to make just our home great again? Just ourselves. I don't know if any of us have ever been great, but good. but your neighborhood, your community. How can we serve our fellow Americans today? Less focus on the media, less focus on the present of the president, less focus on our side winning, their side losing, even less focus on ourselves, more focus on serving others, more focus on fixing our own internal problems, because that's what will make America great again. And that is what matters most.
It's Monday, January 8th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
We have a few things to get to. I have, I think, what is it, 41 predictions that I wrote over the holiday. I haven't even gone over them with everybody on the staff yet. I sent them to Stu late last night. And there's some of them. A lot of them are really risky. I'll give you some of them. Give you a couple of them here today. Some of them is on medicine. Some of it is on religion. Some of it is on war, Turkey, Iran, Russia, Bitcoin, AI. This one, just lost it. Where's the one about the moon? Did you read the one about the moon?
New evidence
will be introduced that will take us one step closer to verifying intelligent alien life. Now, this, I know I'm way out on a limb here. I'm way out on a limb. But something just bothers me that with all of the stuff that is going on with space right now, and you know, we had the guy who was running the program for the Pentagon for, you know, unidentified flying objects. We had him on right before the holiday, and he said something that I think everybody missed. He's like, oh yeah, there's definitely extraterrestrial life. We have the evidence of it, but it's not all out. I mean, what? Hello?
Yeah. Hello?
What? Mm-hmm. Did anybody hear that? Here's the guy who was running for the Pentagon.
Right. It wasn't like Jesse Ventura saying it.
Yes. <Right. laughs> It was the guy who ran the program. And it just seems odd to me, everything that's going on with space. But listen to this. New evidence will be introduced that will take us one step closer to verifying intelligent alien life. While I doubt this, it may be connected to the China rover mission on the far side of the moon. Now, do you know anything about this?
I hadn't until I read this yesterday.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I've been watching what's going on in China. China is going to, I think it's their Chang'e 4 or 5. They have been launching things up in space towards the moon, and they're saying that they're going to land on the far side of the moon, and they're going to be able to launch a rover on the far side of the moon. Now, this is really important for several reasons. One, they're going to do something that we haven't been able to do, and that is send an automated robot on the dark side of the moon, which gives you won't get any information or be able to send any information because it's blocking all the, you know, it's like, you know, making a cell phone call, you know, in your basement where you don't get any good cell reception. So they're going to launch a satellite that will be over the dark side. And it will communicate with Earth, and then this rover will go down. But it also, for the first time, will listen to, low-frequency radio sky. We can't listen in silence to space. So when we're listening for signals for extraterrestrial life, we can't hear them because there's a lot of noise coming from Earth. So if you want it to be silent, you go on the other side of the moon, which is blocking all of that radio, and you're listening to space silently. We've never been able to do that before. So this is really important. If this prediction comes true, this is really important because of the strategic position that China will be in, that everyone is trying to control. There's a space, and I can't remember what it's called. Do I write it down here? No. There's a space, and I can't remember what it's called, but it is this space where all of the satellites and everything run between here and the moon. And if you can control the dark side of the moon, you can control all of that space. So strategically, it puts China way ahead of the game. Way ahead of the game. Strategically, militarily. Mm-hmm. Not good for us. You don't really care.
No,
that.
I do care. I mean, it doesn't seem like one of your positive ones, but
I don't know. Finding, you know, if and I don't know if these would be connected, and I'm way out on a limb on the extraterrestrial life, but what would reaction be like today if we found out that there was really truly life, intelligent life?
I mean, you mean on Earth?
No, that's not going to happen. We'll never find that.
It would be interesting. I mean, the presentation, right? And all, I mean, I go by all the documentaries I've seen over time.
I know.
And the presentation, Independence Day. It would unite us, right, against some sort of enemy almost.
Do you think we would view it as an enemy now? I think we might actually. I mean, depends on how it's framed. Mm-hmm. But if we said, hey, we just got a signal from outer space, I think we might go, oh, they're going to be friendly. Hey, let's make picnic baskets. I mean, there would be the other side, but I think a lot of people wouldn't. A, it wouldn't be the freak out that would have happened when we were kids.
You're right. I think we would be able to. I think we've had enough of those documentaries over the time that have convinced us that's not a good tactic all the time to just assume they're threats and start shooting at them. It doesn't work out well.
Right.
In the documentary Mars Attacks, however, they came and they said, we come in peace over and over again, even as they were shooting us with lasers.
Right.
They were saying, we come in peace.
Right.
And so you can't trust. You just can't trust.
But what was that movie that came out, you know, where they went to the big, you know, square in the sky? Just recently it came out. It was Arrival. Yeah, Arrival.
Arrival, yeah.
Did you see that movie?
I did, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. That was the one.
I mean, I think,
like,
that's the kind of movie that has prepared us for, look, they're smarter than us. They're not going to. They're going to kill us if they want to kill us. So let's just relax. Let's just go talk to them.
It just doesn't seem like they could be a society dumber than us at this point. I assume they're smarter.
Oh, I think that's why they're going to communicate with us. They're like, we can take these guys in about 2.5 seconds. Some great predictions for you later in the week. The return of the 12th Imam is part of it. China, Russia, what's going to happen with the Russia investigation? The things that I think are going to be happening around the world. And some of them are pretty out there. Some of them are. It's a risky list. It's not one that I have full confidence in.
Right.
It's a risky list. It's going to be one that will be fun to watch.
You when they're wrong.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've got 40 of them, so
there's going to be
you're going to have at least 39 opportunities to berate me. Before Christmas, the head of FEMA, Brock Long, told the news media he wants everyone to understand three fundamental truths. One, now this is the head of FEMA. Listen to this. One, FEMA is broke. Two, the system is broken. Three, this new normal means that Americans can't rely on the federal government when disaster strikes, that they'll have to take care of themselves. Do you hear this? Now, why did they release this right before Christmas? Probably so you wouldn't hear it, but they were on record. I want you to hear what he just said. FEMA, we have no money. Two, the whole thing is broken. Three, if there's a big problem, we ain't coming to help. Wow. This is kind of an admission of failure, and it should be a wake-up call to anybody who hasn't taken any steps to prepare. That means securing emergency food right now. My Patriot Supply, the leaders when it comes to food storage and being prepared. And this week, you can get 102 servings of emergency food for only $99. With this kit, you're going to be covered. You're going to be able to eat when a disaster strikes. So call them now. 800-200-7163 or order online at preparewithglenn.com. How is your family going to survive if there is any kind of disruption in the supply chains? You'll receive breakfast, lunch, and dinner that last up to 25 years in storage. Do it now. 800-200-7163 or preparewithglenn.com. 800-200-7163, preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that we should recap for you. One of them is Nikki Haley. I think Nikki Haley is, I mean, she is the superstar. Did you see in what is it, Fire and Fury, the stuff said about Nikki Haley?
Yeah, they kind of seem that she's angling for a potential run in the future.
Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, I wouldn't have considered Nikki Haley to, you know, necessarily vote for president of the United States until I've seen her in action.
She's been great so far. She's been one of the great. Better appointments, I think.
Yeah, she is a home run all-star. Here she is on the Iran protests. We don't have it? Okay.
Video issues, apparently.
Okay.
She's been good on that. I mean, you haven't talked about the Iran issues really at all. And, you know, it was a weird thing. It happened completely, you know, on vacation. Yeah. It's still going on. But this is the time we had this opportunity in 2009 to try to support.
It was more widespread in 2009. And the problem is, and I have not been watching, you know, cable news. So I don't know what others are saying on cable news. But what this really is about is inflation. The Iranians had just put up with about 40% inflation, and it was just runaway and it was killing people. And so they went and they reset everything, and, you know, they got control of their economy, and the mullahs were like, oh, and Allah has blessed us or whatever. And everybody was fine. Now they've promised that they will never see double digit inflation again. Well, it just hit, I think, 11%. And so this started in the most religious communities. This is why it's really dangerous for the mullahs and Khomeini, is this action started over the price of milk and cheese and everything else that they might eat because of inflation in the most religious districts. So these are the fans of the Islamic State at first. The fans were the ones standing up going, hey, you just promised us that we would never, ever have this inflation again. And then that lit the torch, and now it's starting to spread. So this is a completely different kind of movement, or at least it started as a completely different kind of movement than what we had before. Those were people who wanted to destroy the regime against the religious hardliners. Some of these are religious hardliners, saying, I don't know if I believe in this regime anymore. So we have a great potential on it.
In a positive way? If you're coming out and you're saying you guys aren't super Islamic extremist enough for me, that doesn't seem like the good seed of a revolution.
No, I don't think that they're saying you're not super Islamic extremist enough for us. They're saying we're not sure this works. We're not sure this works anymore.
We might still be religious. And
yes,
maybe,
but we're not sure this regime works anymore. The way it is.
You think?
They're getting tired of the average person, and you can be really, really religious but not be on a jihad. And what's happening is the super religious are like, you know what, I just want to be religious, and I'd like my own house to be where I'd like a job, and I'd like to be able to afford stuff, and I'd like to have my family around, and I'm tired of all these grand adventures that you're going on for a caliphate and everything else. That'd be great, but this isn't working. Take care of us first. So it's good in a way.
It's good.
It seems, I mean, certainly presented as positive, and I what for everything I've read about it, it seems to be, you know,
we should be
anything that's going to topple that regime. I mean, is a good thing. Although, you know, we've said that before.
See what happens. You know, who is there to catch it?
Right.
It
exactly.
Falls?
Yeah. You know, ISIS caught part of it in Iraq. Right. I mean, you know, this is always
Turkey.
Yeah. Turkey. That was, you know, I know you talk about Turkey a little bit in your predictions as well, that you're going to be kind of revealing over the week. You know, that's, you see them as really a big factor going forward.
Turkey is going, and I'll talk about this later in the week. Turkey is going to turn much more hardline, and they're going towards Sharia law. They are not going to be an ally of freedom. They aren't already. And I think the Kurds are going to pay a huge price. And the weaker Iran gets, the more Turkey will lick its chops, because Turkey is going to try to remake the Ottoman Empire again. So it's just beginning. I think another interesting thing is, watch for a new Arab Spring in Iran the week of the first day of spring. Because there's another anniversary that's happening in Iran on the day before the first day of spring, that could start a second Arab Spring.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to Pat Gray. From the Pat Gray Extravaganza. Welcome, Pat. How are you?
Good. You?
I'm good.
Does it already feel like you weren't on vacation at all?
No, you know what? We were gone for 2 weeks, and I read so much, and I'm so full of new ideas and new things that this is the first time in a long time I've come back refreshed.
Yeah, we were thinking really? We could do one really good show every 2 weeks. If we went that
right,
you know,
yeah.
But
take
I thought
weeks
that
off,
was
do yeah, a show, take another
yeah.
2 weeks.
I was thinking you do 4 weeks, we do a day. You do 4 weeks, we do a day.
Thoughts?
Let me mull that over.
Right. It'd be a good show, Pat. It'd be a good show for us. It'd be a good show. I mean, it's just riddled with stuff. Have you had the time yet to read Fire and Fury?
No, I have not yet.
You need to, and you need to read it with this warning. If you think, and this is why liberals love this, if you think that he's an incompetent boob, the first third quarter of the book, first three chapters of the book, you're like, wow, okay, he doesn't know what's going on. He has no clue. If you think that he's a bad guy, the first third at least, you'll be like, yeah, okay, bad guy. If you are a liberal, that's all you'll read. That's all you. That's you'll be.
All
fine.
You'll absorb.
You'll absorb. Yeah. You'll be fine with it. If you are a real conservative, you will begin as you read it. You will begin to say, "Wait a minute, this seems like everything that Steve Bannon wants me to believe about Donald Trump, the administration, all the people around." This looks like a really good book for Steve Bannon. Stu and I both came to the same conclusion that it's almost a ghost-written book by Steve Bannon, where he is telling you, in fact, he does at the end, I'm going to run for president, and here are the things that I do. He makes the Trump, they've turned this Gorsuch thing, which may be true, may not be true, we don't know. But Gorsuch came out and said something bad about Trump after the nomination. And in the book, it says Trump said, I want Giuliani. I want Giuliani. Get him out of there. And it was Steve Bannon to the rescue with Gorsuch and said, no, you have to hold your promise to America.
Wow.
Yeah, over and over and over again.
Wow. Like that. Every chapter almost has that.
I've
kind
been
of stuff
fascinated by this Bannon thing because he's all over the place. And I think he's all over the place now And backtracking now, have you noticed what he's saying now? That he's a great man. Oh, and by the way, Donald Jr. is a wonderful man, too. He's really good, too.
Oh, you should see.
And Barron. I love Barron.
Yeah. Ivanka, one of the most beautiful, smart, accomplished women in the world.
When you read the
take... Because he's being destroyed.
Yeah, when you read the takedown that is clearly from Bannon on those two, his children, oh, my gosh. As a dad, I'd be apoplectic.
And he is.
Yeah.
And he is.
Yeah.
And that's why he's destroying him.
So what happens to Steve Bannon from here? What happens to Breitbart? What happens to all? Honestly, I haven't asked this out loud, but for all those people who were behind Breitbart and Bannon and saying that we were wrong, he was a good guy, and we kept saying he's dangerous. No, no, no. These are the kinds of things he does. This book verifies all of that. So are
and they're
are
on those, the record quotes from Bannon that he's not denied.
Right.
So that is the important part of your people are like, oh, it's fake news. He said it on the record and he has not denied it.
Yeah.
Well, I think the time to support them both is over. Hasn't the president made that pretty clear? I mean, you're with him or you're with me. And everybody, including the billionaire backers that were formerly backing Steve Bannon, are off that bandwagon.
He's losing all his friends.
Yep.
Did you see that he is, I think Drudge did this, so I'm not sure if this is true or not, but meeting with a big Chinese backer, which
doesn't seem good.
Doesn't seem good, especially after you read the book and see what he said about China. And then in one of the most incredible portions of the book, when they're talking about Russia, Steve Bannon is quoted as saying, that's what's so great about me. I don't even know Russians. I've never been to a Russian restaurant. I don't like Russian dressing. I mean, he goes, doesn't he?
Oh,
he goes on and on and on about how he has no connections whatsoever. He doesn't even know. That's a lie. That's a lie. I can guarantee you he's had conversations with Russians. I can guarantee it. Guarantee it. Look at who he's surrounded with.
And that's the thing. Like he keeps trying to play this off as like, oh, I was just going after Manafort or whatever. He said that the chances of the Russians in that meeting not going upstairs and meeting with Donald Trump, the chances of that were zero.
Right. Yeah, that they wouldn't have specifically walked them
upstairs.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. And he called Donald Trump treasonous. For what he did.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty hard to back off treasonous.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
He's trying to
it's
do
unbelievable.
It, but it's hard.
Yeah.
You're not a great man if you're committing treason. And that's what now all of a sudden he's a great man. Well, yeah.
Because he's destroying
being
you.
Being destroyed.
I think Bannon overplayed his hand. I think Bannon thought this was going to come out and make the president look bad. And like the things about Gorsuch, wait a minute. He was the guy who did Gorsuch, not Donald Trump.
You're not going to win that
and
battle.
And somehow or another, everybody's going to go like, I like Donald Trump, not this spooky guy in the shadows. I like him much better now.
No.
No.
Yeah,
it's not going to happen.
He really thought he thought this would turn people around and have them go, oh, I like the spooky guy in the shadows more than Donald Trump.
You're probably right. And that's really flawed thinking based on everything we've seen from Donald Trump from the time he entered the race until now. He destroyed everybody.
So another thing that I read in the book, and Stu doesn't remember this, so I don't know. I think I read it in the book. We'll have to look at it. But I read somewhere, and I thought it was in the book, that trying to find his background on Seinfeld, you know, everybody said, oh, he was part of the investor in Seinfeld. And I think it was in the book that said, no, we couldn't find any evidence that he was involved with Seinfeld at all.
Which is like supposedly the claim where he's getting all of his money from, and because he was not a huge like high level guy at Goldman.
Give me your Stu said. Here's my favorite quote from the book. This is so good
about Bannon.
Yeah,
for a man with a strong sense of his own destiny, he tended to be hardly noticed. That was describing his life. He tended to be hardly noticed.
Wow.
And then that, you know, it plays into his narrative, which is, you know, he needs to be noticed. He can't resist telling the media how brilliant he was and how this is his doing. Mm-hmm. And I think what he wants to do now is, now that he's out, one of the first things he said when Bannon left the administration was the presidency as we knew it is over.
Mm-hmm.
And so now he wants to say, hey, all these bad things that are going to happen are Jared and Ivanka's fault. right? Because he doesn't like them. And he's trying to paint this as now you what you liked about Trump was me. And now the stuff you're not going to like is them. But honestly, I mean, one of the what half the problem I have with Donald Trump throughout from the primary on to today was Steve Bannon. Right. Like the fact that he's out, we've seen a huge improvement.
Oh,
I think in the administration, things have been getting done.
A far better first year than I could have imagined.
Yeah. I mean, and later in the since Bannon left, there has been a noticeable positive change, at least policy wise. Right. Like there's still you're still going to get Trump, you know, tweeting about how he's a genius. Right? That's not going to end. All right. That's never he's like a genius. That's never going to end. But that's just
no.
Him.
He's not like it. He's like a very smart person
and a very stable.
He's
genius.
A very stable,
very stable genius.
Genius.
I apologize.
I want a very stable genius T-shirt. I want one.
That's very.
I want one. I'm going to make one.
And that's what I think he enjoys about the job. Right. Like that's he likes the back and forth. He likes taking it to the media. But Bannon wants you to know that the policy stuff was him, and this bad stuff going on now is Jared and Ivanka's fault.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it, like throughout the book, it just reads like he's trying to send you a message. And I think, you know, that's the price
you have to read.
The price
it.
You pay for access.
I'm going to read it.
You have to read it because I'd love to hear, because the media has it all wrong. The media is just focusing on Trump is an imbecile. That's not the point of this book. It's really not the point. That is the surface level. You look down and you see what is Bannon trying to foster for 2020? What is he actually doing? I don't think anybody on the left will understand this book for what it means to the people on the right. And it's a really important look at what is coming on the right with Steve Bannon. Now, he may have blown it.
Oh, I think he did.
Yeah, he may have blown it.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
And that, what a horrible miscalculation on his part to think that he can go up against Trump and reposition Trump. And become the guy everybody looks to in 2020. There's no way you're going to do that.
So you know what's really interesting is Roger Ailes said to me one time, I said, Roger, and this is absolutely true. And did you guys ever spend any time with Roger?
Well, I had one meeting with him.
Very
one
little.
Meeting.
But,
was it a good meeting or a bad meeting?
It was fine.
Okay.
I don't remember.
This guy, you heard me tell, I would leave his office and I would come and tell you guys, you won't believe what just happened in this meeting.
Right.
So he's very entertaining and super smart and just really good at what he did. And I said to him at one point, I said, you would have been the biggest TV star in the history of television. And he just looked at me, and that's all I said. And he looked at me and he said, but I looked like this. And he knew. Yeah. And he knew.
Yeah.
And there was some sort of, you know, a tinge of regret that he wasn't able to do it. I don't think that Bannon has that self-awareness. I think Bannon thinks,
he doesn't.
I'm the face of this.
Because they both see themselves as the same character, right? The person who's smart enough and could do it. And of course, the difference is that Ailes has had success and has been able to do these things where Bannon
has not. He's got Roy Moore.
If what was the quote again? Largely unnoticed.
Yeah. What happens to Breitbart? What happens to the Patriot Channel?
I think Breitbart in particular is damaged now. And who knows if they can salvage that?
They can salvage it if they distance themselves now.
Yeah, they got to get away from Bannon.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can do that, because that would be a positive. Because there's always been good people working at Breitbart who have gone through that. I mean, Ben Shapiro was there forever.
Yeah. He left because of Bannon.
Dana Lash was there. Yeah. There was a lot. There's been great people who have not only gone through there, but there are some that are still remain. And so there's no reason that Breitbart has to trash Breitbart's memory as it has for several years. There's no reason they can't turn that around. I think everybody now realizes that Bannon hijacked that organization. So if he leaves, they could turn themselves back around to not just be a political organ for one guy.
How do you get rid of the people that, are probably still cheering for people like Milo?
You're going to need a house cleaning of many of the people there. But there's a lot of good people there, surely.
Well, they're going to have to decide. Do you want to be alt-right or do you want to be conservative?
Yeah.
You're going to have to make that decision first. And then you go from there. Maybe they like the Milo people. I don't know. I guess it's who takes over instead of Bannon that will determine that.
Well, you have to read Fire and Fury, Pat, because you'll be able to. You just have to.
You just have to turn down the Donald Trump censor and mm-hmm. just go, okay, whatever they say about Donald Trump, don't read it for Donald Trump. Read it for policy and direction and what Bannon is saying. They try that. This writer, I know, thinks he's hurting Bannon by saying, well, he's a nationalist and he's for all these big government status kind of things. No, Bannon wants you to say that. There's a lot of people on the right now that believe in that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's setting forth a new conservative movement, and he's using this. This book is a Trojan horse.
Pat Gray Unleashed on the Blaze Radio and TV Network, coming up after this broadcast. Also available on iTunes and anywhere else you can find a podcast.
Paying off debt can take you forever, and it piles up fast, but it doesn't have to be this way. If you own a home and you have some equity, refinancing to consolidate and pay off your debt can make your life a lot easier. So, is that the right thing to do for your situation? Great way to find out if it is make a 10-minute phone call to the salary-based mortgage consultants at American Financing. Now, I tell you that they are salary-based because every other loan company in the industry will sell you loans, but they make money from the bank. So if they sell you, you know, let's say the bank says, I want you to get everybody into these, you know, refi things, they'll get an extra bonus if they talk you into it. That's not what happens at American Financing. So you'll call them and they'll review your current mortgage and they'll look at everything and they'll say, you know what, that's not the best option. Either I don't have any options for you, or here's a better option for you. That's what they do. They partner with you. American Financing. They get you straightforward and effortless mortgage experience at AmericanFinancing.net. Call 800-906-2440. 800-906-2440. AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
It's kind of a big week, personally at least. Today is my 18th wedding anniversary. I married the most wonderful woman in the world who, we were talking last night, this time has flown by. When we talk that we've known each other for 20 years, it just seems like, what? How did that even? And I've been married before, and it didn't necessarily move as quickly as this one has. So, 20 years. And this Friday is our 20-year anniversary of working together, is it not?
Yeah, my first day as an intern was this week 20 years ago, which seems freaking crazy.
Yeah, that I brought you along
and, yeah, exactly.
And promoted you from intern.
Can we also disclose that today is tonight's your anniversary and you've invited me to a movie?
Yes, we're very romantic.
So you're doing a good job there. Yeah, it's working out well. Good job,
Tanya. She planned it.
Nice prick up on the free agent market there, Tanya.
She planned it. She was like, dear God.
Get us into a dark room wherever other people are. And other people are talking when we can't speak.
We're with the whole family. No, we're taking the whole family to go see Darkest Hour tonight. And would love to have you come because you will love this movie.
I really want to see it.
You will love this movie.
Winston Churchill.
Oh, my gosh. And it's just... my wife went to it going, this is the price I pay being married to Glenn Beck. She came out loving the movie. It was her suggestion to go again tonight to take the whole family. Mm-hmm. Darkest Hour. See it.
Glenn Beck.